This is Phil Nee. I hope all your trails are happy until we talk again later from WRCO FM in Richland Center, Wisconsin. We're at 50 degrees at 9 o'clock. News time from ABC is next. Sponsored by the Phoenix Center. Family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, along with video games.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot. With the government shut down now in a third week, the U.S. is preparing to give $20 billion to prop up Argentina's economy. Argentina's president, due to seal the deal with President Trump at the White House today, and ABC's Jay O'Brien on Capitol Hill says it's a highly unusual move.
The Treasury Secretary says it's meant to support a U.S. ally in South America, but Democrats up here on Capitol Hill pouncing, accusing the president of sending money abroad, but cutting services like Medicaid and food assistance here at home.
There is no home in Gaza. Only 17% of buildings are undamaged, making Palestinian refugees in their own territory. Even with peace in the air, Israeli forces killed five Palestinians who they say got too close today. Hamas yet to release the bodies of 24 hostages. Consumer Reports says most protein powders and shakes contain more lead in one serving than experts say is safe to consume in a day. This is ABC News. Gen Z protesters. Listen to what they've accomplished. The young people of Madagascar celebrating after the nation's president fled the country, pushed out by Gen Z protesters. Similar protests also led to the toppling of governments in Nepal and Sri Lanka. Sounds like measles are back in West Texas. The outbreak that began in January was declared over in August. But ABC's Jim Ryan reports cases are ticking back up now.
Since late August, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has been reporting an average of 27 new measles cases each week, more than 1,500 altogether nationwide. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy, a longtime vaccine skeptic, is nonetheless encouraging people to get vaccinated against measles.
Two Texas children died of measles. More than 750 people got sick during this outbreak, which was declared over this past summer. I'm Wayne Cabot, ABC News.
The Phoenix Center has made lunch easy and delicious. Open every day at 11 a.m., they serve a full menu with a strong focus on lunch favorites like burgers, salads, wraps, sandwiches, and signature appetizers. Whether it's a quick bite or dinner with the family, the Phoenix Center delivers even to go. Call 649-7469 for carryout and don't miss their famous pizza, a local favorite in Richland Center. That's the Phoenix Center.
Thanks to the Schultz Mortgage Team for sponsoring WRCO Hometown Weather Watch. Call 608-738-8765 to learn how you can buy a home with less than 20% down.
A high of 63 today and turning cloudy. North to northeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Areas of light rain tonight, a low of 47. Light showers possible tomorrow and a high of 58. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, a few showers possible, a low of 47. Thursday, more clouds than sun and warmer. Spotty showers possible and a high of 64. And Friday, 75, with scattered showers and thunderstorms expected. If you're looking for a career that values your hard work, Cardinal Glass CG in Spring Green is hiring. With competitive wages, career advancement, and a 401k with profit sharing, enjoy a clean, climate-controlled work environment and choose from 8 or 12-hour shifts with premium pay for nights and weekends. Earn vacation hours from day one and start building a better tomorrow. Apply in person Monday through Friday, 9 to 3 at 1024 East Madison Street, Spring Green, or call them at 608-588-9831.
Since 1986, Lime Ridge Ag has been a partner with livestock and crop growers in the area. They have also helped support the community, schools, organizations, and people in need. And the primary ability for them to give back is with the support the community has shown them. Thanks for nearly 40 years of feeding your dairy, your hogs and beef, your poultry, pets, horses, and show animals. Thanks for the opportunity to provide agronomy-based products as well as feed and grain handling equipment. Lime Ridge Ag, helping grow nutritionally sound beef, pork, and dairy products.
Tri-County Building Supply is located in Spring Green and is this area's premier building headquarters. Whether you are a veteran contractor or a weekend warrior, Tri-County Building Supply has all your building material needs, including the finishing touches like cabinetry, countertops, and flooring. Tri-County Building Supply offers daily delivery service to Spring Green, Richland Center, and surrounding areas. Quality products, outstanding customer service, and the product knowledge you expect from a professional building supply store. From start to finish, Tri-County Building Supply.
This is Tyler Wilkinson with Wilkinson Law Group. You know what I hate about lawyers? Billable hours. Sure seems like with billable hours, everything takes too long, costs too much, and no one has any idea what it's going to cost. That's why we charge simple, flat fee rates for our estate planning, real estate, and probate services. After we meet and talk, you'll get a flat fee price for the services you choose. I hate billable hours, but I love making our clients happy. Wilkinson Law Group, estate planning, real estate services, and good, honest advice. More info at wilkinsonlawgroup.com.
This autumn, TriStar Gifts and More invites shoppers to explore a season full of treasures. From elegant candles and seasonal decor to handcrafted Amish gifts, there's something for everyone. Hunters will love the Amish-built hunting blinds, featuring panoramic views, insulated interiors, and sealed windows, floors, and runners for comfort and quality. Celebrate this season at TriStar Gifts and More on Highway 14 East, right next to TriStar Mulch in Richland Center, where the magic of autumn comes to life.
The Morning Show on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com, featuring real community conversations that matter to our community. The WRCO Morning Show studio is proudly sponsored by Richland Hospital, caring for the health of our community. Scott Industries, enjoy building strong futures. Osborne Stump Removal, clearing the way for what's next. And Sean's Auto Repair, keeping you on the road with service you can trust. On a morning show today from WRCO, it's time for our quarterly visit with Evan Ewing, public health specialist with Richland County Health and Human Services. Good to have you in here. It's kind of topical subjects right now, Evan, as we look at the, I don't want to say winter, because I don't like, well, I guess I just did, but the colder months, right?
Yeah, I know. It's, well, I appreciate you having me on, Phil, and yeah, we're gearing up for the respiratory virus season. Our unit right now is really busy with school flu vaccine clinics, so kind of thought, you know, what better time than now to provide listeners with some prevention tips and information to stay healthy as we kind of lean into that season. So, yeah.
What have we already heard, Evan? There's been a few things going around already, correct?
Yeah, according to the, actually have a some updates from the current respiratory levels in our area. We get a respiratory report every Friday from the week before, and that we get that from the state, and it's open to the public too. You can go to the Wisconsin DHS webpage and access that information. But from the week of October 4th, the current overall activity, and this is based on emergency room visits for respiratory illness, right now it's pretty low and stable, so it doesn't really show any trends yet increasing. But in August, we saw a slight increase up to near like the third week of September, and then it decreased slightly. So there's more activity than July currently, but compared to the last couple of weeks, we're at kind of a stable level. So looking at each virus, like for COVID, it's decreasing and at low activity for the state. Influenza is at minimal activity, slightly increasing, and then RSV is at minimal activity and stable. So our region specifically isn't too different. We're seeing some decreasing trends right now. But last year, things peaked in January and early February, so I'm sure those trends will continue to increase and rise as we get through going into kind of peak winter season. But I think COVID was increasing a few weeks ago, and now it's kind of stable and decreasing. So we saw a similar trend last year, too. I think when people go back to school, it rises up a little bit and then drops off before we get right into the middle of winter.
I talk to area coaches and I kind of get the health report there, and that's a good way to find out what's happening in the schools lots of times. But there was a pneumonia going around there for a little while too, I heard, at some area schools.
Yeah, I think just people being back in closed spaces with each other, you know, you're bound to probably have some stuff going around, unfortunately, but yeah.
Tis the season, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I think the nice weather, though, helps us out a little bit, because I think we're still, you know, getting out a little bit more and getting some fresh air.
Yeah, especially it's been, you know, fairly warm, I would say. You know, 60s, you can still get outside and do outdoor activities. I think once the days get really short, you know, when it's dark at like 4:30 or 5, then people are just kind of hunkered down after work and everybody's staying in. So
That's coming early November, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
So give us an update on some vaccines.
Yeah, so just talking general respiratory virus prevention, vaccines are one of the best ways to prevent illness. So always recommend staying current with all your vaccines. And the 2025-2026 flu vaccine is now available. So if you are uninsured or underinsured, we can actually provide the flu vaccine to you at our immunization clinics at Health and Human Services. Our next vaccine clinic will be held on October 23rd from 1 to 4. At Health and Human Services, we're considered a VFC program provider. So VFC stands for Vaccines for Children, which is a federally funded program in the U.S. And that provides free vaccines to eligible children who might not otherwise be vaccinated due to cost. So just ensuring that all children, regardless of their ability to pay, have access to those recommended childhood vaccines. So that eligibility criteria would be, you know, if you're enrolled in Medicaid, if you're an American Indian or Alaska Native, or if you don't have health insurance, or if your insurance doesn't pay for all vaccines. Similarly, we're a VFA program provider as well, which is vaccines for adults. And adults would qualify for those if they're uninsured or underinsured as well. So, that would be like if you don't have insurance or if it doesn't cover certain vaccines, then you could be eligible for the VFA program. Walk-ins are always welcome at Health and Human Services when we have those immunization clinics, but we do encourage that people call in advance. It just helps us with scheduling. So currently the COVID-19 vaccines are not available at Health and Human Services, but hopefully in the near future we'll have those available. But if you are insured, if you have insurance, you can always talk to your healthcare provider and they can likely provide you with all the vaccines that you need, or you could go to a pharmacy as well. DHS, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, they continue to recommend the COVID-19 vaccine for Wisconsinites that are 6 months and older during that fall respiratory virus season. And then the RSV vaccine is not currently an annual vaccine, so that means that eligible adults don't need to get a dose every RSV season. The CDC recommends only a single dose of RSV vaccine for all adults ages 75 and older. And then if you're 50 to 74 and you have an increased risk for severe RSV disease, then you would be recommended as well for that. So that would be like if you're immunocompromised or something like that. So in terms of virus prevention, respiratory virus prevention, those vaccines are always kind of that first recommendation that we would give to people.
And you mentioned people that are uninsured or underinsured or whatever. What about elderly, you know, Medicare and Medicaid? Can they go to Health and Human Services for that too?
We've done some billable when we were at the Senior Expo, and we did some billable there, but they should be able to get those through their provider. I think the only one that the vaccine that kind of falls into our realm would be tetanus. And I think that's because some healthcare providers don't offer that. So then they would be considered underinsured, and we could give them the tetanus vaccine or the tetanus shot. So otherwise they should be able to get that through their provider or a pharmacy.
What are some other steps that we can take as far as prevention, Evan?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's some general ones that I think most people think of or aware of. And when I list these off, you'll probably be like, oh yeah, this makes total sense. So just avoiding close contact with people who are sick. So if you know somebody's sick, just, you know, not being around them or being exposed to that in that time period. Covering your nose and mouth when you cough and sneeze is a good way to prevent other people from getting sick. So trying to cough and sneeze into your elbow is always a good recommendation. Avoid touching your face. So I think in the summer, I get personally a little bit lax with that, where, you know, I'm going to my office, have lunch, I'm not really sanitizing my hands. Once we get into the respiratory season, then I'll try to be a lot more on top of that. So, you know, if you have some sanitizer in your car, it's always a good bet just to put some of that on before you go home. And then washing your hands for at least 20 seconds. I think some people do the, you know, just wet your hands and go, but using soap and making sure that you adequately wash your hands for you know, at least 20 seconds is a good prevention tip as well. And then there's some or immune system supports, you know, just getting enough sleep, trying to manage your stress, eating healthy, exercising, those type of things can just help you. You know, if you do get sick, it might not be as bad as it might not be as bad if you're, you know, in good condition and health.
Mm-hmm. You can get over it a little bit faster, hopefully.
Yep, for sure.
What about guidelines for staying home? Because I think those have changed in the last few years.
Yeah, I know during COVID, it was, I think when it first started, it was 14 days, and then it went to 10 days and then 5 days. And so we do occasionally get calls from businesses or people just wondering about stay-at-home guidance. You know, not only for themselves, but if they run like a small business, they might wonder, you know, what should I do for my staff or recommend for them? So you'd want to stay at home or away from others if you have respiratory virus symptoms that aren't better explained by another cause. So, you know, sometimes like with Lyme disease, fever and body aches might be due to that and not a respiratory virus. So if you can't explain it with anything else, then, and those symptoms would be fever, chills, fatigue, cough, runny nose, headache, just those common respiratory virus symptoms. It's recommended where you can go back to your normal activities or return to work when for at least 24 hours, both of these things are true. So your symptoms are getting better overall and you've not had a fever and you're not using things like Tylenol or fever reducing medications to reduce the fever. So symptoms improve, fever free for 24 hours. Those are the two guidelines. If you can meet those, then you can return to work. When you go back to work, it is recommended over a 5-day period to sort of take some additional precautions. So trying to take steps for cleaner air. So if your HVAC filter needs to be replaced, you could do that. Or if you have people visiting your house and you have central air, you can switch the fan to auto. So it's just running, the fan's running constantly. Practicing good hand hygiene, like we talked about, wearing a mask can be beneficial as well to protect other people from getting sick. And then physical distancing and testing can be beneficial too, if you know you're going to be around other people. So, it's important to take those precautions, especially if you know you're going to be around people that are immunocompromised or would be likely to have a more severe course of illness. Those type of things are good to do. If you work in an office setting and you can close your office door, then, you know, you can isolate yourself and, you know, return to work in that way. But if you're going to be around other people, it's beneficial to take those steps as well.
What about home tests, you know, COVID tests? Somebody might have one that's been laying around for a little while as well. Those do expire, don't they?
Yeah, I think it's the FDA. You can go on and look at. They had a list of where you can see extended expiration dates. So some of them are extended, some of them are not. So I would recommend checking that out to see if the test that you have is expired or not. Probably wouldn't rely on the results too much if you use one that's expired. But yeah, you should be able to still purchase those. We did have some at Health and Human Services, but I believe they expired right at the end of September. So I believe it was through the FDA as well, where you could order 2 home kits for free. I'm not 100% sure if that's still active, but I think around the respiratory virus season, they restart that. So you can just order them and they just mail them right to your house. But they're a good tool to utilize to, you know, try to determine what virus you're experiencing. And then you could go to your healthcare provider and get that tested as well.
Mm-hmm. Easier to stay home than not get out.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah, for
exactly.
Sure.
If you have one, so
yep,
maybe
no doubt.
Be proactive and get one then.
Yeah, for sure.
I know you wanted to talk about CHIP implementation today. What does that involve?
Yeah, so I've talked about the CHIP before on the morning show here, the Community Health Improvement Plan. Just for context, the community health assessment is done every 5 years, and using that data, we create a community health improvement plan. All this work was done prior to my start with the county a couple years ago. So when I got onboarded on, we were in the CHIP phase, the community health improvement plan phase of implementation. So we have two priority areas that we focus on: substance misuse, which is specifically binge drinking for adults, and then we have mental health. And so my thought, or I wanted to talk about alcohol use specifically, kind of going into the winter season. I think I would speculate that I think people tend to drink maybe a little bit more in the winter time, just because you're held up in your house, maybe not as much stuff to do. So wanted to discuss that a little bit today. I do want to preface the segment by saying that I'm by no means saying that you mustn't ever consume any alcohol, but more so how you consume it is important. If you're not currently consuming alcohol, then it's not, I'm not saying that you should start by any means, but just wanted to preface that with a lot of these tips are for people that might be currently consuming alcohol. So just for some background, alcohol is the most used addictive substance in Wisconsin. According to the Behavioral Risk Factor Survey from 2023, 18.4% of adults in Wisconsin reported binge drinking within the past month. And that's 3% greater than the percentage for the United States. So to define binge drinking, that would be drinking so much alcohol at once that there is 0.08% or more alcohol in your blood. For most men, this would be drinking five or more standard drinks within a few hours. And for most women, that would be four or more standard drinks within a few hours. And that excessive drinking can be detrimental to your health. So it can raise your risk for injuries, car crashes, alcohol poisoning, a lot of those behavioral things that you just would not want to have happen. It can put you at risk for being violent or experiencing violence. And it can also impact your body, essentially. So it's a central nervous system depressant. It's a drug that slows down brain activity. So it can change your mood and your behavior and impact your self-control. Another factor that I wasn't too aware of until I was doing some research for our show today was that there are at least seven different types of cancer that are linked to drinking. So breast cancer, colorectal, esophagus, liver, mouth, throat, and larynx cancer, or your voice box. And that heavy alcohol use for a long time can lead to things like alcohol use disorder, liver diseases, so like cirrhosis or fatty liver disease, heart disease, the increased risk for those cancers mentioned, and then an increased risk for injuries as well. In addition to those health impacts, that can also cause problems at home, with work or with your friends or family. And those drinking habits can become the habits of your kids in your life too. So kids start having opinions about drinking alcohol as early as age eight, partly based on what they see adults doing. So really thinking about your drinking habits and how you can model healthy choices for your kids is important. And there's a page on the Wisconsin DHS webpage that discusses what are called small talks. And those are essentially, it's a resource to help adults learn how to talk to their children about alcohol and hopefully prevent youth from drinking alcohol. So that's just some kind of stats and background on alcohol use in Wisconsin. And there are some tips too on the CDC that can help you drink less. And I can talk about those too as well.
Okay. And, you know, when you talk about alcohol, and I'm no doctor, but I've heard this before, that if you go out on a bender, this kind of ties into what we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. it does weaken the immune system, and sometimes you'll wind up with a cold the next week then too, right?
Yeah, I think it can really dehydrate you, and then I think that's, I'm not 100% sure what contributes to the, you know, the term hangover, but I think a lot of it is dehydration and, you know, all of those, you know, if you're not getting enough sleep and you're dehydrated and your nutrition's way off, you're eating a lot of junk food, all those things, they are going to kind of run you down and maybe make you more, a little more susceptible to those respiratory viruses.
You've been working in partnership with Partners for Prevention mm-hmm. as well, haven't you?
Yeah. I'm currently the vice president of the coalition. So we do a lot of work with them. Their alcohol work group serves as our substance misuse work group as well for our CHIP implementation. So, working on a lot of, trying to make events safer and having those guidelines and structures in place to, use of wristbands and trying to work with them on, like fencing and those sort of things to just make sure that youth, can't access alcohol easily.
So. Yeah, it is an uphill battle because, you know, living, as you mentioned, where we live, sometimes it's a rite of passage for many.
Yeah, I think that's one of our causal factors for adult binge drinking is the community norms. So the that pervasive drinking culture that Wisconsin's known for. If you are currently drinking and you want to drink less, the CDC has a really cool screening tool that's called Check Your Drinking, Make a Plan to Drink Less. And it to prep for our morning show today, I actually completed it just to see what the sort of output is at the end of it. And it asks you questions about your drinking habits. And then it talks about motivations to reduce your drinking. And then they also talk about barriers too. And then it creates this plan for you on how to drink less and some tips. So it's a really useful tool, I think, if you're looking to try to reduce the amount of alcohol that you consume.
Throw in a little water once in a while in between, right?
Yeah, for sure. Some of the tips, you know, avoiding some of the stronger stuff. So this would be tips if you're currently drinking, would be to, you know, choose drinks that are lower in alcohol. So you could even swap out some of your drinks for alcohol-free versions. I know there's a lot of like mocktails and, you know, alcohol-free beers and things like that you could try. Another tip is to beat boredom. So trying to find other things to do instead of drinking, like exercising. I'm going to make a plug for disc golf. I love disc golf, and that's a fun way to get outside and, you know, not drink and do other, you know, fun activities. Changing up your social plans is good too. So trying to do things with friends that don't involve alcohol, like watching a movie, maybe go out for breakfast instead of going out at night for drinks. You can always decline a round. So if you don't feel, if you don't want to drink, you can decline a round of drinks. Even if somebody else is buying, you can always just get one next time. If you tend to drink before, during, and after your meal, then you could maybe just have one during your meal instead of all three periods there. And then setting a drinking budget can help too. So limiting how much alcohol you buy, maybe you take out exact cash when you go out instead of using your credit card or debit card. So those are some tips that the CDC provides just in general to try to adjust your drinking habits and consume less.
Great. All good tips. We'll come back after the break with more from Evan Ewing, public health specialist here on this edition of The Morning Show.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Saxonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
At Rockwell Automation in Richland Center, they're more than a company, they're part of the community. Their team includes coaches, board members, firefighters, and EMTs. Neighbors helping neighbors. Now, Rockwell wants to connect with local nonprofit and 501c3 groups for volunteer and donation opportunities. If your organization would like to partner, call 647-9400. Rockwell Automation, ingrained in the community, dedicated to making a difference.
Looking for a career where tradition meets opportunity? Join the legacy at Scott Industries, a proud family-owned business celebrating 75 years. They're expanding and hiring dedicated team members. No experience necessary. Just bring your enthusiasm. Enjoy competitive wages, benefits, and a $3 per hour night shift bonus. Apply in person Monday through Friday, 9 to 3 at 810 East Nebraska Street in Muscatine, or call 739-3171 to learn more. Scott Industries, a profit-sharing company where you can grow your career.
The Richland Hospital and Clinics is proud to offer personalized support for people with diabetes. Our team can help you set and track your health goals, practice fitting diabetes care into all parts of your life, and learn the knowledge, skills, and tools that will allow you to manage your care. Whether you are newly diagnosed or have been living with diabetes for years, we can help. Our services are covered by most insurance companies. Just ask to meet with a member of our diabetes education and care team.
Are you looking for a meaningful way to give back to your community? Passages is looking for compassionate, motivated volunteers to join our team. We provide men, women, and children survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault with free, confidential services regardless of age, sex, or gender identity. We have a variety of volunteer opportunities available, from yard cleanup, donation sorting and organizing, and fundraising support, to shelter advocacy and survivor support. There are also a couple of larger outdoor projects that would be great for teams. Do you want to share a skill? We're also launching new life skills programming and are seeking volunteers to lead classes such as yoga, sewing, crocheting, cooking, meditation, grounding exercises, and more. Whether you're interested in direct client support or behind-the-scenes help, there's a place for you at Passages. Did you know that every hour you volunteer helps Passages meet its grant match? Learn more by visiting our website at passagesrc.com and click on the I Want to Help tab. There you will find a list of opportunities and a volunteer application. Join us in making a difference, one life, one step at a time.
This season, make the short drive to Spring Green and take a tour of Taliesin, Frank Lloyd Wright's legendary home and studio. Tours depart from the Frank Lloyd Wright Visitor Center daily through October and Fridays through Sundays until mid-December. Visit Riverview Terrace Cafe for breakfast or lunch and enjoy scenic views of the Wisconsin River. It's the only remaining Frank Lloyd Wright design restaurant in the world. You can also discover unique holiday gifts at the Wright Gift Shop. Learn more at TaliesinPreservation.org.
Don't touch that dial. You are tuned into Wiffle's Country WYFF, the station that's been family-owned and fiercely independent for almost 80 years. No nonsense, just common sense and chart-topping corn hybrids coming to farm gates all over the Central Corn Belt. Stay tuned for more Wiffle's Country hits like She Thinks My Colonel's Sexy, I Got 99 Problems But Yield Ain't One, and Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Sell Soybeans. Thanks for listening, and remember to keep it independent with Wiffle's Hybrids.
Helping your inner circle prepare for emergencies can start in many ways. Put together an emergency kit with YPOL. Create a family communication plan with your tita. Remind Bai to keep a backup battery charged. It all starts with a simple step, telling those you care about to be ready for the worst. So start a conversation and plan for emergencies together. Get more tips at ready.gov/start. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Evan Ewing is in the studio to talk about some timely topics here today on our edition of The Morning Show. We wanted to touch on some mental health things. You have some information about that, Evan?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, the other priority area with our community health improvement plan is mental health. So our mental health work group as part of our community health improvement plan has been working really hard to reduce the mental health stigma within Richland County. So when I say stigma, I'm referring to, or it can be defined as, an unfair set of beliefs, attitudes, or discriminatory behavior about a topic or group of people. And in this case, it would be those that are experiencing mental health challenges. And so by reducing stigma, our hope is that residents will be more comfortable not only talking about mental health, but more comfortable in seeking services or help for those mental health challenges. We've been offering and have provided a few mental health stigma reduction presentations utilizing the Make It Okay curriculum, and that strives to make it more normal to discuss mental health challenges and to really talk about them in a more positive frame of mind. There's a lot of myths around mental illness, like that they're a sign of weakness, or that therapy is only for people with serious mental illness, or that mental illnesses are rare. Another one is that youth don't experience mental illness, or seeking help means I have to take medication. Those are all common myths. We know the truth is that mental illnesses are quite common. So 1 in 5 U.S. adults experience mental illness, compared to 1 in 10 for a physical condition like diabetes. Therapy can be used in a variety of mental health illnesses or challenges, for example, anxiety. And I think it's probably fairly common knowledge now that youth do in fact experience mental health challenges, especially with the current social media climate and cyberbullying, those kind of things. So I think a good example of sort of assessing if mental health stigma is present, And this example is in our curriculum for Make It Okay. But when we give the presentation, we'll ask the group this, how would you describe someone experiencing cancer? And we get a lot of answers like describe them as a warrior or a fighter. And then we ask the group how they would describe someone experiencing a mental illness. So maybe something like schizophrenia, for example. And those descriptor words are often the opposite, a lot more negative, quite different. So I think that's a prime example of mental health stigma, where we don't view mental illness as being a medical condition. And I think we place a lot of blame on the person. But we know that mental illnesses are, in fact, medical conditions that are biological in nature. Your environment can impact those as well. When stigma is present in a community, it can lead to things like shame or isolation, feeling discriminated against, and it can deter people from getting the help that they may need. So our work is really trying to eliminate the mental health stigma so then we can empower people to get the treatment they need and create a more caring community around mental health. If you're listening today and you want to sort of help eliminate stigma, and these are tips that we give in our presentation as well, would be to use respectful language when you're talking about mental illness. So not using like derogatory terms to describe someone that's experiencing that. You know, you don't want to say things like using words like crazy or psycho or, you know, those more derogatory terms.
Or get over it.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things.
Yep. And that really dismisses what that person might be experiencing. So another one would be like, you know, we all have those days, or it could be worse, those type of things. Those aren't going to help the individual. So using that respectful language is important, seeing the person and not the condition. So recognizing that this is a human being that's experiencing this, it's, you know, and I think that happens a lot. Like not seeing the human being happens virtually, you know, if people are commenting on social media, those kind of things. You can offer help and support and really just recognize mental illness as a disease. So, if somebody opens up to you about their mental health, it could be helpful to ask them questions like, you know, do you want to talk about it? How can I help? And really utilize those active listening techniques and just sort of not shying away from the conversation. So really sitting in with them and experiencing that with them and asking them a lot of questions. So if you're trying to direct someone or help someone, a great first step is to recommend they talk with their doctor about their mental health concerns. They may be able to provide a referral to a mental health professional. If your employer offers an employee assistance program or an EAP, they may provide free therapy sessions as part of your employment. So that can also be a great place to start. That's been part of our work is to survey businesses and identify if they offer an EAP, and then we can give them a toolkit that we created that has QR codes to local mental health services and resources. So then at the very least, they can give their employees those resources if they can't provide an EAP for them. NAMI, so the National Alliance on Mental Illness, they have some virtual support groups as well that operate out of Dane County. So that's the closest one to us that operates. And we've gotten good feedback from those, the Dane County group, that people like those because they're anonymous and you can just log on and talk about your, you know, challenges there in a safe space. And then self-care and protective factors can help make a difference too. So those would be things like mindfulness, physical activity or movement, restful sleep, social connection, all of that. So if you're listening and you're hearing all this and you think that this would be helpful for your workplace, or if you want to get involved, feel free to reach out to me and I'd be happy to get you into our CHIP mental health work group. And if you think your employer would benefit from that Make It Okay information, just let me know and I can provide that presentation or get you that information as well.
Yeah, it's good for us, you know, that may not be experiencing that, to kind of be up on the situation, because I think sometimes you don't know what to say or do, or you don't want to say the wrong thing.
Yeah, for sure. I think the big thing is if you think of just employing empathy, so asking questions, really trying to make that person feel comfortable. Make It Okay curriculum is really big on stopping the silence. So really trying not to be judgmental and just move on from the conversation. So if I said, you know, I'm really struggling with my anxiety today, not just being like, oh, okay, and then talking about something else or ignoring that. more so being like, you know, what can I do to help, or tell me more about that. Just opening up that conversation can be really helpful for that person.
Let's talk about some other things concerning Richland County Health and Human Services and public health. What are some frequently asked questions, Evan?
Yeah, so one of them is, can I donate my used medical equipment for the loan closet? Or we just get a lot of questions about our loan closet. So for those of you out there that are listening that aren't aware, at Richland County Health and Human Services, we have what's called a loan closet, where you can rent out used medical equipment at an affordable rate under the agreement that you return the equipment in good condition. So currently in our inventory, we have a lot of walkers and crutches. We have wheelchairs. We have plenty of those and shower benches. So at this time, we probably wouldn't be taking donations for those items. But if you are in need of those items for rent, we have plenty of those to rent out. We occasionally get questions about accepting donations for items like medical boots or, you know, like wrist stabilizers, things like that. And we don't accept those. Basically, you know, they're hard to disinfect after each use, so it's going to be going to a lot of different people. So some other stuff that we wouldn't accept for donation would be things like incontinence pads, wound care dressings, blood pressure machines, CPAP machines, oxygen tanks and supplies, glucometers, medications, clothing and bedding, and PPE. So those items we would not take. I always recommend that people call in advance if they want to donate something before they bring it to Health and Human Services and then ask us. That way we can save you a trip if we're just not able to take that item in. You know, we do get pretty filled up in there. So there are sometimes items due to overabundance that we're just not able to accept. So I always recommend to just call in advance and ask before you make the trip down to Health and Human Services. But we always appreciate people wanting to donate. I think it's such a nice gesture to want to pass that equipment on to other people. I don't have all the prices handy, but I think our highest cost item to donate or to rent out is a wheelchair at $10, and kind of goes all the way down to like $2 for crutches. And those are up to a six month rental time period. So it's a great service if you just have like a, let's say you broke your ankle and you need a set of crutches and you don't want to go out and buy a brand new pair, you're only going to use them for a short period of time. It could be a great option to just rent out from us at the loan closet.
How do you go about making sure that they're safe? I mean, if somebody donates, because I know, especially with kids, kid carriers and things like that, they're very strict on, you know, what, you know, like secondhand stores won't take them, for instance, because they're afraid there might be something like a defect or whatever. How do you go about making sure that things are safe?
Yeah, we look them over before we accept them. So generally good condition would be that they're clean and they function. So one thing we do check is like for the walkers that have brakes, we'll make sure the brakes work. We do have, shout out to Dennis in maintenance. He does a lot of work on repairing those and making sure that they're good to go for the community. So they're definitely looked over before we would accept them and make them available to rent out.
Right. And that's an awesome deal, you know, because obviously you've got to buy them or your insurance pays for portions of them, but you're not going to find it cheaper than $10 or less.
Yeah. And a lot of times we do get some pretty new equipment that people will donate, which is awesome. And, you know, still might even still have the tags on them. So we have some good stuff for rent out there.
What about food and beverage permits? Do you guys do that?
Yeah. So this is another frequently asked question. So our public health unit is part of Richland County Health and Human Services. So we're not considered agents of the state in our unit. So none of us are registered sanitarians. So we can't complete restaurant inspections or issue food permits. But if you are looking to obtain one, we always recommend that individuals visit the website for the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, or what we call DATCAP for short, DATCP. If you search that on the web and visit their site, they have a number that you can call, and there's also an online form too that you can fill out and request a permit or license. We'll occasionally get some calls with questions around food permits or those restaurant inspections, and that kind of transitions into another FAQ, which is about reporting food poisoning, or if somebody wants to report a restaurant that they ate at that they believe they got sick from. So sometimes we'll get calls for that. They'll try to alert us that, hey, I think I got sick at this restaurant. As I mentioned, we're not considered agents of the state. So DACAP would be that entity responsible for completing the facility inspections. But there is a tool on the Wisconsin DHS webpage where you can report your illness. So I want to preface, though, with the fact that if you live in Richland County and you're tested at the hospital for an enteric illness like Campylobacter or Salmonella, for example, those type of conditions are reported to the health department anyways, and we would begin an enteric illness interview trying to determine where you ate and what your course of illness was like. Norovirus is not a reportable condition, and I think that's oftentimes what people have when they're experiencing food poisoning. So if you visit the web and type in food poisoning Wisconsin DHS, the first link will take you to the food poisoning webpage, and they have an online reporting tool that's linked there. And when you click it, it'll ask you about your symptoms, places that you've recently visited, food you've eaten in the last few days. And this is not submitted to healthcare professionals. So if you're sick, you should still reach out to your doctor. We can review that report that is submitted, and then we can reach out if we need additional information for an investigation. So that's usually where we'll direct people if they want to report their own illness. Otherwise, if you go to the hospital and you have a stool sample tested, and let's say it tests positive for one of those reportable conditions like Salmonella or Campylobacter, then we'll be notified anyways and we'll reach out. So hopefully that helps kind of direct you if you have food poisoning or if you want to report an establishment.
You can't just assume that, oh, I got sick here, I suppose, without the test, right? Because it could be a number of things.
Yeah, it's and that's something, too, when we do our interviews that we'll say, like, none of what we're not pinpointing. We don't know for sure where you got sick from, but we'll try to get as much information. And then that goes on to the state level. And, you know, if there were, 10 cases of one specific illness that we notice in close proximity, all in Richland County, then we could kind of, that might go to the state level for a more, specific investigation into a potential cause. But yeah, hopefully that helps for those listening.
You have an event coming up. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, I wanted to shout this out. There will be an open house on the Richland County groundwater quality at the Richland Center Community Center on Wednesday, October 29th from 6 to 8 p.m. Some of the partners involved in this event include the Southwest Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission, Richland County Land Conservation, Clean Wisconsin, UW-Madison Water and Trace Element Research Lab, and then us in public health. So there's going to be a short presentation at 7 p.m. that will include a segment from the water lab. And then we're going to do a short 10-minute presentation as well. Our section is going to talk about the recommendations for testing your well water, some of the public health implications if you do have like bacteria or something that tests high, and what to do if those results are elevated for bacteria or metals. So there's going to be light refreshments provided, and it's an open house, so there's no sign up or registration required either. So hopefully I'll see you at that event if you have a well and you want to learn more information about your water.
Do people get cards in the mail for instance, for well water or for septic tank usage and those kind of things?
I'm not sure, actually. That's a good question. We offer the... if people need to do well water testing, if you have a child that's under 1 year old, we can do some fee exempt testing for you. Otherwise, you can get the water test kits from Health and Human Services, but you'd have to pay for whatever tests you want to run. So that's about the extent that I know kind of with what we offer. I'm not sure what residents get mailed to them, but it would be nice if there's reminders and stuff too to test your well water.
Indeed. If you're selling property, lots of times, you've got to get that done, pass the test and things like that. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else you want to, it's good stuff, good topical conversation here today.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty much it. If you have questions, you can call Health and Human Services 608-647-8821 and just ask for public health. If you have questions about anything that I talked about today and need more information.
Stay safe, wash your hands.
Yeah, for sure. All those prevention tips are great.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll come back and see us
few weeks. Get that scheduled, but yeah, for sure.
Sounds good. And again, October 23rd is an important date.
The 23rd for our immunization clinic at Health and Human Services, 1 to 4 p.m., and that would be primarily if you're underinsured or uninsured. And then the 29th is that... groundwater quality open house at the community center from 6 to 8. So,
very good. Thanks for what you do.
Awesome. Thanks, Phil. Appreciate it.
Good to see you again. You bet. Evan Ewing joining us, public health specialist with Richland County Health and Human Services.
This fall, help support families in our community by adding your fall favorites to our fall food pantry collection. Julie Karen State Farm is a permanent drop-off site for the food pantry, so it's easy to give anytime. Bring canned goods, pasta, rice, soups, peanut butter, or seasonal favorites like pumpkin puree and applesauce to help stock local shelves. Every donation makes a difference and keeps the spirit of giving alive this season. Stop by Julie Karen State Farm this fall and add your favorites to our food wagon. Like good neighbors, we can all be there.
Here is Jamie Gander of Badgerland Flooring.
We started our business in 2008. We named it Badgerland Flooring of Southwest Wisconsin, obviously. And then 6 years ago, we started doing kitchens, and we just want to really get the word out to people that we're doing those now as well. We have a showroom west end of the building is committed to kitchens. You know, we do bath remodels, vanities, countertops. You can do any type of flooring, walk-in showers, but we're really trying to let the public know we're doing a lot of kitchen nowadays, too.
See Badgerland Flooring in Richland Center for more information.
Rockwell Automation in Richland Center is more than just a workplace. It's part of your community. Their team includes coaches, board members, firefighters, and EMTs. People who live, work, and volunteer right here at home. Rockwell is proud to serve and support their neighbors every day, both on and off the job. Now, they'd like to connect even more with local organizations. If you're part of a nonprofit or 501c3 and have volunteer or donation opportunities, Rockwell Automation would love to partner with you. To learn more or get involved, give them a call. 647-9400. Rockwell Automation, ingrained in the community and dedicated to making a difference.
With the uncertainty in crop prices right now, let Cal Seeds and Golden Harvest take some worry away during this harvest season. From now until Friday, capture max discounts and 0% interest financing for your 2026 seed needs. The best part? You don't have to have an order put in until November 14th. Just by signing up for your Golden Advantage, you capture the max discounts and 0% financing. That's 0% until December 2026. It only takes 5 minutes to sign up. Call Kelsey Faber at 608-415-0765. Have a safe and bountiful harvest.
Michelle Reinen from DadCap is here for our monthly visit on the morning show about some protection topics and tips for October. Well, Michelle, I think we need to be aware of cybersecurity at all times, but during October, there's a special month set aside for it, right?
Absolutely. It's the perfect opportunity for consumers to brush up on everyday cybersecurity practices that can help protect them from scams, malware, device failure, and just other common issues. And over time, our digital spaces can become cluttered with out of place and unnecessary data, just like our junk drawers at home. And we hope consumers take time this month to clean up and organize their digital files with just some basic, simple tips and practices that consumers can add to their everyday cybersecurity routines.
So I guess we never probably back up things enough. We need to do that more, don't we?
You're correct. Important digital files like work, photos, personal documents, and receipts should be backed up on an external storage device or with a cloud storage device, because this protects these files in case the original device fails or if it's compromised by malware. So create a regular backup routine for extra security. Figure out what works best for you. Is it every day, once a week, once a month, every time you take X amount of photos on your other device? But find the routine that works best for you in securing your information.
How long should we keep things, you know, like sensitive information? Should you delete it eventually, or how do you look at it?
Yeah, we need to regularly review those saved files and so we can identify unneeded sensitive documents. For example, old tax paperwork that we may have electronically. It's not staring us in the face as the same as it would if it's in a file cabinet. And then when you get rid of it, you need to be sure you're fully deleting them from the device. And that even means your backup storage. Don't just delete it from your baseline device. You need to be sure if that sensitive files were ever backed up, that they're also removed from that backup device so you don't allow inappropriate access to that information.
We should probably not email our Social Security number and things like that to somebody else, should we?
You're correct. Please do not do that. Even if it is sent to a trusted source like a friend or family member, sensitive data like your personally identifiable information, Social Security number, bank accounts, dates of birth, and other account passwords should never be sent by email, text message, or direct message. You want to be sure that whenever you are allowing that information out of your hands, you're doing so in a very secure manner that may be face-to-face contact or using encryption or directly to a secure portal. But don't just use that email, text, or direct message methodology.
And if we have a USB thumb drive, we probably should delete things off there when we're done using them too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's your little small storage device, if you will, the file folder itself, not the big file cabinet. But be cautious using USB thumb drives. They're really convenient for sharing files, but they can also spread viruses and malware. So you can easily lose them as well. So if you have sensitive data on that, you want to make sure that it's securely stored on that device if you're transporting it, because it could end up out of your bag or out of your hand and someone else could gain access to it. And in turn, if you see a device or receive one through a contest, promotion, or free, be cautious when plugging that directly into the computer, because unless you know where it's been and who's had access to it, where it's come from, you could be loading something onto your device that will give it a virus or malware. You need to be very cautious with those small little thumb drives.
Another October topic is fake landlords offering real housing. What is that all about, Michelle?
Yeah, this is a scam spotlight. We heard from a tenant who reported to us that the landlord of their newly rented apartment was not really a landlord at all. Before moving in, the tenant had paid the first month of rent, a security deposit, and signed a lease. Well, that seems pretty normal, but the tenant moved in at the beginning of the month and contacted the landlord later when they had a maintenance request to fix a water leak, and they received no response. Well, days after submitting that request, the apartment ceiling actually collapsed, and while no one was injured, the tenant again tried to contact the landlord and received no response. Local officials inspected the damage, and they deemed the property uninhabitable. Well, so now the tenant really needed to get a hold of the landlord, but they began searching the property records online to find out other contact information for the landlord, and they discovered that the property was actually listed as a short-term vacation rental on Airbnb and wasn't really a long-term, you know, housing rental for lease. So to their surprise, the landlord wasn't a landlord. The landlord was really a scammer, the person who entered into the lease with this tenant, and they had sublet the property without the knowledge or consent of the real owner, and that scammer took the tenant's money and, of course, that personal information in order to even originally rent the property, and the tenant was unable to recover their money or compensation for the damaged property that they had.
What's the best way to kind of run a check on a landlord?
So we hope everyone runs internet searches for the landlord's name and property address and then investigate those results, really take a look at them. Then ask the landlord for contact information of past and current tenants, because then you can ask them about that renting experience, that referral type situation. But then search for the property on popular rental listing websites like rent.com, apartments.com, apartmentlist.com. There's many of them. If it appears there, the tenant can then confirm the landlord's listed contact information matches what they've received as the contact information and make sure things look like they align appropriately.
Let's talk about fake loans, and some scammers have been working hard on those behind the scenes. What can you tell us about that, Michelle?
Well, here we're aware that consumers are receiving calls and voicemails about large loans that they, quote, qualify for or that they never finished their application for. But really, these are all just scam attempts. They're not real offers or true reminders. Scammers are making these calls hoping consumers become excited or alarmed and that they'll provide their personal information to either complete or cancel the loan application before they have a chance to really just pause and think about it. We've seen that these scammers are very persistent and will repeatedly call and leave voicemails. Some calls have provided very specific amounts of the loan, and we've seen as high as $52,000.
Wow, that's incredible. So what should we do to try to avoid that?
Well, ignore the calls, even if they're persistent. And then be skeptical of caller ID. We've talked about that a lot over the years, but scammers can use fake names and phone numbers to look like local or trustworthy businesses or government agencies. So we need to just be cautious of spoofing. Block the number and take advantage of any phone provider's anti-spam services to prevent future unwanted calls. Report the calls to DADCAP's Bureau of Consumer Protection. And the biggest thing of all, never, ever, ever hand out your personal information like a social security number, bank